Welcome to Brave, Bold, Brilliant. Your host, Jeanette Linfoot, talks to incredible people about their experiences and unleashing their full potential. From the boardroom tables of big international business to the dining room tables of entrepreneurial startups, embracing opportunities, overcoming challenges, taking risks, while staying true to yourself is where the magic happens.
Hi, it's Jeanette here. If you're enjoying Brave, Bold, Brilliant, I'd love it if you'd subscribe, share with your friends, and leave a five-star review. Let's do it. Here's the show.
So, welcome to Brave, Bold, Brilliant podcast. I am here today with one of the absolute legends within the travel industry. It is someone that I have known for, oh my gosh, nearly 20 years. So I'm showing my age here. Obviously, I'm delighted that Burak Tumbel is joining us. And Burak is the managing director of Diana Travel, which is in Turkey. So we are going global. We're going international today, Burak. Nice to see you.
Well, Jeanette, thank you very much for this nice invitation. I am so happy to be together with you and giving this special as well occasion, like starting abroad with me first. It's a big pleasure. And I'm so happy to be together with you. Thank you.
Oh, it's great. Honestly, Burak, and we, as I say, we've known each other for many years. So yes. a lot has changed in those nearly 20 years.
Yeah. When I see myself in the picture, it explains a lot. Yes, I can see it. Yeah.
Honestly. Thank God for makeup. That's all I can say. Sometimes I am actually really glad that I'm a woman. But you look great. You look great,
thank
Burak.
You too.
So, go ahead.
Well, yours is compliment, but mine is reality. So let's put it that way.
Come on. We speak the truth. You know that. I only speak the truth.
Yeah,
so Burak, we've known each other for a long time, but obviously some people might not know who Burak Tumbel is and Diana and all the great business ventures that you've got. So do you want to just give us a little bit of background on your story and where life started for you, how you've ended up in the position that you're in now?
Of course, with pleasure. So the company is acting in almost all the branches of tourism in Turkey, except the flights, the airlines. So we were in the ferry business before, we are in the transportation now, we are an incoming, we are a tour operator, and we are hotel management company. So Diana Travel was established in 1977 in a town called Kuşadası on the west coast of Turkey. Why Kuşadası? Why on the west coast of Turkey? To give some brief information to the audience, Kuşadası is the biggest cruise harbor of Turkey, still. It's bigger than Istanbul because of Ephesus ancient site just next to the town. So the company was established as a cruise agent on the port. So we were giving port agency services to the customers who were coming with the cruise lines to Turkey on those years. And then we started our ferry operations from Samos, which is the Greek island opposite of Kuşadası. On those years, there were no charter flights to Turkey yet from any European or Western countries. And then the tour operators, which were making charter business on those years to Samos, were our clients via ferries. And that was the time when my father, who is the founder of the company, convinced these tour operators to start their operations to İzmir Airport. And we became the incoming agents of some tour operators from Europe. So that's how we started our direct communications with the tour operators then. So the journey started with these operations internationally. And then we grow our business. So we became the partner during all these years. We were representing the respectful companies of mainly Midwest Europe and UK. So we have been representing LTU Group before. We were representing Thomas Cook, which is all brands and source markets except Nordics in Turkey until it collapsed. Now, still today, Diana is representing EasyJet Holidays from UK, a Hellenics group from Germany, Luxair from Luxembourg, and again, still they are producing about 500,000 customers per year in the country, together with our partners from Europe and the UK. So, and then Enertravel also entered to hotel management business in 1983 with its daughter company, which is called Paloma Hotels. Until 1993, we were making management, rents, and also the ownerships together. In 93, we canceled the rentals and the management contracts, and we started to manage only our own properties. Today, we have 9 five-star properties in the resorts of Turkey, in Antalya and on the West Coast, and we are welcoming about approximately 160,000 customers in our hotels in every summer, mainly in summer. So giving holiday services to our tour operator clients. So this is more or less the story of the tour of the short journey of Diana Travel. Like I said, I am the second generation of the company. Together with my sister Ece, we are managing the company. She is acting as a managing director on the hotel section, and I'm acting as a managing director on the tour operator, transportation, and incoming side of the business. So it's half, let's say, amateur, half professional way of handling our companies. We both born in tourism. We studied tourism, and we are still educating ourselves.
Oh, fantastic. And Burak, you know, I mean, obviously, like you say, you're second generation, you know, you took over from your parents who started the company back in the 70s. And there's been a lot of change, hasn't there? You know, and in terms of you as well, you know, I remember when we first met, you were working in the business, and yes, now you're in the position of managing director. You know, I think Hassan had a very clear succession plan. What shall I say for his son and daughter? He's very lucky to have two smart kids who are now, you know, in the positions that you're in. So I think what I'd like to explore is, what was it like for you growing up in the family, like, you know, with two very ambitious, you know, entrepreneurs, business people that were aggressively growing those businesses? And then you're there as a child, you know, at school, you know, doing all the things, but you would have always been in that environment of the business and travel. It's in your blood, really. So yes, I just understand what it was like as a child growing up in that environment for you.
Well, actually, I started when I was 13 as a bellboy. So we were carrying bigger luggages than ourselves and trying to bring these luggages to the rooms of the customers. So on those years, it was like a game in summer, but we started when we were 13. Yes, it is not easy because, you know, Janet, joking apart, tourism business needs discipline because people are working 12 months and dream about their holiday, and our job is, first of all, not to spoil their dreams. Our job is first to deliver their dreams to them as they expected. So that's why it needs a lot of discipline, and we are working with people. So it's not easy to keep people in that streamline always to give the expected services by the clients. So that's why, knowing this from the beginning, of course, it's not that easy to work with such disciplined parents, or let's call them bosses, because I mean, in any failure, you are in it. It's not only a kind of a warning from your father and mother, but it's also a deep warning, which is also becoming a kind of an example to your colleagues. So it's not that easy. But today, I'm so happy and lucky. I feel so happy and lucky that I have born in this business, and I have a teacher like my father. Because today he's still alive, he's still our mentor, and it's a kind of a free insurance or security. Whenever you want, you can just, he's just on the other side of the phone, you can ask his advice. and all his experience is behind you. So it's a good feeling.
Yeah, was it difficult, do you think, for you to take over the reins from when the time came right, or was that sort of something that you'd been working towards for many years together with Hassan and your father in terms of handing the business over to you to run the ship, so to speak?
No, not at all, because in the end of the day, as we are a national company, I have always working in the different branch offices and in the different roles of the company until I came to my position and take over. And our and as having our international partners like yourselves previously, I mean, we have always been finding the experiences to improve and develop our talents, to meet the global people, to understand more about them. So it was giving us the chance also to keep educating ourselves within the business. So this was very important. And I was having the chance to work with my father approximately about 20 years. So he decided, it's not an easy thing, I have to say. I mean, I have to admit, it's not easy. We were having lots of crashes. So it's not a very silk road to walk over, of course. But we were 20 years together. I mean, sorry, eight years ago, when he was 62, he decided to retire and he passed over the business to us. And I was asking why, because there was no health issues, there was nothing that he needs to stop in that age. He said, now there is a time when you need to hand over the business to the second generation. Otherwise, that time will never come and you will get exhausted, and that when that time is not hit at the right point, it will never come again. So he decided to leave the company and he is gone. So from one day to another. So they are having their own business with my father about organic farming, wine production, and organic products. So they are so happy in that section. And now I understand him much better, Jeanette, because he did the right decision at the right time while all his mental and physical abilities were still 100% active. He did that decision brave enough. All the things he constructed himself, it's not an easy thing to hand over these things to someone else, even if it is your son. I don't think it's an easy point. So I think he did the right thing, I have to say. I think he did the right thing at the right time, because all these curses, what we are having in the industry, like pandemic, like coup attempt in Turkey, like all these difficult years we were facing together with my sister and having more and more experiences about the industry by the time.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And as you're speaking, actually, Borat, because, you know, I think a lot of the people listening may be entrepreneurs themselves. They could be in family businesses, you know, in a similar situation. Maybe they're the second generation, you know, moving forward. Or maybe they're thinking, actually, what do I do? Do I hand over the business to the next generation? Do I exit? Do I sell? And I think there's lots of complexity around family founded businesses, and actually every single one may choose a different path. But you know, for you, 20 years, it was the longest job interview ever, I think, Burak.
Actually, yes. I have to say, it took a lot of time for me to sit his chair.
But no, I think yeah, exactly. Knowing Hassan as I do a little bit over the years, over the many years that we've had the pleasure of knowing each other, I think he probably always had a clear plan. And he actually executing it stage by stage, starting you off as a bellboy. You had to earn the position for him today. Absolutely.
I mean, at the end of the day, our family has a clear agreement as a family law. That says, I mean, if we are not capable of managing our companies, we have to hand over to the professionals. So we have our targets, we have our all KPIs and so on, as you can imagine. So every end of the year, we give our figures to the board, explain the situation, and try to convince the board members, although they are family members, convince the members that we have the right to keep our positions. That's why I say we are half, yes, family business and amateurs, but on the other side, we are trying to manage our company as professional an institution as possible from the partners we have today and previously.
Well, absolutely. And let's talk about that a little bit. Because, of course, there's the business locally, the operation on the ground where you service the guests and you provide them. And I have to say, actually, you do provide an incredible, incredible service. You always have. And the quality and the values that you have really shine through. So, you know, I've always been a huge, huge fan professionally of your business, as you know, both the hotels, the DMC and all the other aspects. So that's the first thing. But you're right, because you are a family business, but your clients, your customers, the tour operators, the airlines, etc., a lot of those are, you know, big global listed businesses, you know, like Thomas Cook, like EasyJet, you know, these are listed on the London Stock Exchange, etc. So clearly they have to partner with, you know, the best professionals in each of the destinations. So how do you manage, Burak, to almost bring those two aspects together? Because you've got the DNA of the family and the values, and then you've got some of the more, let's say, the processes, the systems, the sort of the way that, you know, maybe a sort of corporate organization has to run. How do you bring those two together in a way that works for you and for the client and the customers at the end?
Well, first of all, if you are not a local company, and if you want to become a national company, you need to change all your regulations. You have to apply all the international laws and regulations of the tour operators you're representing. Otherwise, you remain and stay local in a very small destination, and you cannot expand your business to a national or even to an international level. So that's why, first of all, if you want to represent an international company, even in a smaller scale, you need to understand the rules and the regulations of your partner. Because here in Turkey, we are not representing our own customers. We are the face of the tour operator we are representing. So we need to observe and understand the rules and the regulation and the promised services of that tour operator to its clients. So that's why it's the first thing. So you need to understand your partner first, what it is promising to its clients, and you need to deliver absolutely the minimum that promises to its clients. Otherwise, all service is collapsing, because it is simply, like its name, it's the representation of someone else. So that company is trusting you and giving you, with an agreement, the services of its clients. So we are educating all our people under that discipline and understanding. So all the Diana employees knows that they are working for Diana Travel, but their responsibility is towards the clients of the third party with the rules and regulations of third party. So they know how to apply. We put our minimum service requirements with the tour operator partners, like SLAs. And with that SLAs, we are training our people, and we try to keep and monitor our services minimum on that level. So mentally, our people knows that, yes, they are working for Diana Travel, but to be able to work for Diana Travel and be the part of this family, they need to understand the international rules of the services.
Yeah, I love that. Understand the rules of the game.
yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. When EasyJet Holidays is sending its customers to Turkey, we cannot say that you are in Turkey and this is the rules of the country. No, that package is both there, and we need to give and deliver the services which that package is sold and promising to that client. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, Gary Wilson also came on the podcast. So I interviewed Gary is the managing director of EasyJet Holidays. And I've also interviewed Johan Lundgren, who is the group CEO of EasyJet as well. So they are, we've got lots of common friends there with the EasyJet family. And Burak, let's talk about the destination, because you know, Turkey, I'm a huge fan. I've loved the destination for many, many years, but it has changed so much, hasn't it? And we were reminiscing about one of my first trips, I think, back in the day when I was at Thomas Cook and you were showing me the resort area of Lara, which, gosh, back then was not even a building site, I don't think. It was sort of, you know, just spare land. So the destination has changed and evolved a lot. So just, can you just talk about sort of what some of those biggest changes have been that you've seen, Burak, over the years?
Well, you know, tourism industry, I think, is changing very fast. I think after the technological industry, tourism is the second fastest industry, which is changing frequently, rapidly, and very speedy. So in the first years when I started my business, all the hotels were small. It was about bed and breakfast and maybe half board with a pool room, and that was it. Now, in Turkey, only in Antalya, we have 9 different resorts with more than 700 hotels. Each hotel has a huge, huge, huge land and about minimum 300 to 600 rooms with 5-7 a la carte restaurants, all-inclusive services, aqua parks, lots of kids facilities, big, big, big service requirements. So this was the fashion of last 10 years in our history. Now, what I see is technology became the majority and the priority of the industry. So everyone wants to reach the client as quick as possible. But at the same time, now sustainability became the major topic of our industry. In Turkey, Janet, Ministry of Tourism, they started the pandemic a certificate system. They say secure tourism certificate. They implemented a certificate with the hotel. So it's an obligatory certification program. So it is justifying that you are following the COVID programs. Sorry. According to the rules and regulations of that certificate. Now, after that obligatory certificate, now Ministry of Tourism in Turkey is implementing sustainability certification to each hotel. So it's a very respectful, I have to say, certification program. We are all aware that in the hotels, even the tour operators already started to put that brandings now in their brochures or in their websites. This hotel is following the sustainability program. So I think in a very short future, this will be the priority choice of the customer, that if that hotel is applying such programs or not, giving enough respect to the nature or not. So all this will be the priority. And I'm expecting in a very short future that all these all-inclusive programs will start to evaluate again with an easier marks, because all these consumptions will not be sustainable future. So I can clearly say that we give a very remarkable example. In the beginning of our career together, there was no resort called Dara in Antalya, and it was only a flat land. And now it is huge, amazing hotels. It is one of the most important 12-month operational resort of Antalya Airport. And it is one of the biggest tourism center, and there was nothing existing. I think this is one of the most, remarkable example of the change of our industry. And I am expecting another change with the sustainability, with the board formulas, and I think clients will like to discover more and more about destinations in the future, and they will combine lots of different resorts, not only the beaches, but they will also combine two, three resorts at the same time, with culture, with discovering more.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting evolution, Borak. I agree with you, you know, because, you know, I think the growth in all inclusive, I mean, like you say, some of these hotels are just, I mean, they're like small towns, you know,
yes.
There's so much happening in them, you know, the number of restaurants, the water parks. I mean, it's, you know, they're almost like mini Disney resorts, some of them, you know, they've really got that aspect of sort of very strong on family experiences, I think, in terms of the activities.
Yes.
But I guess one of the flip side, and I think it's always been slightly contentious, is, you know, the growth in all-inclusives in any destination. But let's talk about Turkey, because that's what we're here today to talk about, is, you know, is that damaging to the ecostructure and the, you know, the other parts of the country don't necessarily get a share of business because it's all people, you know, the customers are staying in the hotels, they're not going out to the local bars and restaurants and spending money there, etc. So I think there's been some tension possibly between all inclusives and those hotels which actually also provide jobs outside of the hotels. And I think what we'll start to possibly see is this blended experience, as you say, where maybe people want a great all-inclusive, but they also want to get out, see the country, experience the local culture. So how do you think that will evolve, Burak, that kind of combination, really?
Without the all-inclusive packages, Turkish tourism would never be at its position today, first of all.
Yeah, 100% agree.
Today, Turkish tourism success is coming from the successful all-inclusive formula. And it still keeps generating. And it will hunt for another period of time. But all-inclusive hotels, Janet, in Turkey, they are big. I mean, all-inclusive hotel is, yeah, I mean, home to say, but in the end of the day, while we're making this podcast together, I would like to explain it to the audience. I mean, the hotels are not small. They are big, and they are generating minimum 1,000 clients per day. And it is a huge consumption. Yes, that's true. But at the same time, it delivers a big trade and industry to the agriculture, local suppliers, local providers. So it is feeding approximately only locally 56 different industries and spots. So
Wow. It's
a big generator with itself. So it's not only preparing the buffets to the customers, but behind there is the all-inclusive formula or all these big investments are supplying lots of jobs and businesses and opportunities to 56 other branches or industries around itself. So it's a big organization. So you cannot romantically say that, yes, we don't like all-inclusive anymore and we want to change this from one day to another. No, it doesn't go like that. So there needs to be a smooth replacement of this successful product. That's why I say, yes, all-inclusive formula will evaluate. So the new generation, the new customers, doesn't want to stay only in the hotel. They also want to discover what is going on around the country or around the neighborhood where you are visiting. So it's not going to the hotel, staying there 7 days, only enjoying the a la carte restaurants of the hotel, the beach, the aqua park, and the children's facilities. No, they want to discover. Oh, I'm sorry. So with all this due customer habits, we are preparing new programs to the tour operators and our customers. So it's not like daily excursions, but it's like in our old programs, like these twin centers. So it's like Istanbul and Antalya or Izmir and Cappadocia type of thing. So people are also doing one week summer holiday and a couple of days discovering experiences in the country together with the culture of the of the Turkish nationality. So it's a big mixture, and they want to also interact with people, and they want to share all their experiences from their personal social media sites. So this is clearly something they want to share with their friends and with their families. So we would like to improve this as much as possible, and Turkey offers a lot. So it's not only five-star all-inclusive package.
No. Yeah, I agree. I mean, as a destination, there's so much, isn't there, Borac?
Exactly. There is a lot to see. There is a lot to do. And from all this crisis, we learned that to depending on one or two source markets is just not sustainable. At the moment, many source markets were introduced during all this pandemic times and all this crisis, Virginia. And this is all these new clients are coming with their own interests. So not everyone is interested with all-inclusive formula, but with all these clients, new segments of tourism is improving too.
I think that's what we love about the industry. It's constantly evolving, yes. Constantly changing. You know, you've got different cultural mixes happening that never happened before, you know, and the needs of the customer. The customer, as you said, is much more aware of the importance of sustainability and protecting the planet. And they're more and more making choices, informed choices, to gravitate towards those businesses that act responsibly, that actually do take care of those aspects. Whereas probably 5-10 years ago it was a nice to have, whereas now I think actually the customer is potentially even prepared to pay a little bit more to actually spend time in a hotel that holds the same values as them in relation to these important topics of sustainability and ecology, etc. So I think it's interesting. And you touched on, Borac, about if you have an over-reliance on, one nationality or two nationalities, that's quite a dangerous place to be, because it can leave you exposed. Now, Justin, I'm not wishing to get into a political debate at all in this context, but just thinking about how, the mix of nationalities into Turkey. So, there was a time when, the German market's always been strong. I think the British market has always been strong. You know, there was a time when the Russian market was really big, especially into Antalya. And obviously that's changing over time. And in particular now with everything that's happening, that nationality mix will have shifted. So what's the makeup at the moment, Borac, of the kind of nationalities that are visiting Turkey, and how has that helped you? You talked about diversifying and sort of having a greater spread. What does the picture look like today?
Well, first of all, Istanbul became a very popular destination again. After the opening of the new airport, I think, and the new, there is a new marketing and promotion agency in the Ministry of Tourism, which is actively working, especially in the pandemic times. It was helping a lot to make the advertisements of the country to the right spots. So with the help of that, I think we were really active and practical in the crisis and approaching to the right markets. First of all, in the first year, just to give you a short example, in 2020, UK market, although there was a pandemic condition, UK market was still working with its own regularities, but the gates were open. But somehow, in 2021, it was prohibited, and British market was not able to come to Turkey until beginning of October. So we lost all the season. And this year, UK was having its most successful season ever in Turkey. And as Russia and Ukraine problems started in the beginning of the year, we pushed a lot in German market, a lot in the UK market. And just to give you a very interesting example, first time in the history, Antalya Airport was producing more English clients than Dalaman Airport in Turkey.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
The Dalaman Airport was always about two and a half times more UK customers. And this year, Dalaman became 1,050,000 customers. And Antalya produced 1,150,000 customers from UK, which is a big number, actually, for Antalya. And I can clearly see that it's not a shift from Dalaman to Antalya, it's the new clients. So for next year, we are expecting the UK market to produce approximately 4 million customers, including Istanbul, and this will put UK the number three position in Turkey, not only generating to two airports, but Istanbul, Izmir, Bodrum, Dalaman, and Antalya together. So it's going to be a big choices of, so it's not choices, but it's a kind of a, not like German market only in Antalya, but two to five different airports. Let's put it that way.
Okay. So is Germany still the largest overall?
No, it's, interestingly, Russia was not producing until mid-June this year. And from June onwards, Russia started to fly to Turkey again. And from that moment onwards, Russia became the number one nationality.
Yeah.
Antalya, interestingly, and German became number two. But nationally, German market is number one, Russian market is number two, and British market is number three at the moment this year. With the diversification of the markets, what I meant, there's Janet, was before our Middle Eastern markets were not that successful, especially Eastern Europe and Baltic countries this year produced a lot. Like countries like Czech Republic, Poland, Latvia, Lithuania, Romania, Bulgaria, they were really, really producing really good numbers according to their previous productions. There is nothing to compare. Huge amount of customers were coming to Turkish resorts. So that was working right. So Turkey already exceeded the figures of 2019 by, if I'm not mistaken, almost 20% in total, which is quite a good amount of turnaround after such years.
And this that's fantastic, yeah.
This happened from mid-June onwards. So until mid-June, the season was not promising at all. We were in a very depressed environment here.
Yeah. What I've always noticed over all the years that I've done business in Turkey, and it's been for many years now, is the agility. In the market. So, you know, I would say that the Turkish suppliers, partners, the destination, the tourist board as well, actually, and I will say this, you know, have always been very responsive when there's a problem. So we know our industry is prone to economic shocks, all sorts of things. And we've just been through arguably the worst and longest, you know, situation with the pandemic. And I think that ability to be able to, you know, pivot, relook at your business model. What do you need to do to change? What do you need to do to stay competitive? And that has been, I think, a characteristic of the Turkish market for many years, as long as I can remember. But when you think, Burak, about the challenges, and it's great to hear that now, you know, those numbers have really recovered in such a strong way. It's fantastic to hear. But when you think about the period you've just gone through with Diana and specifically around the pandemic, what were the things that you had to do in order to survive, not just survive, but to thrive and be able to come out the other side? Because I'm sure you've had, you know, as managing director, you have to make some tough decisions during those difficult times. So what were the things that you had to do that actually made sure you came out in a strong position in the end?
Well, unfortunately, these beloved countries having advantages and disadvantages. Turkey is in a very fragile geographical position, unfortunately, and of course this affects our industry the first. So that's why being in this business almost since 50 years, we learned some stuff.
Just a few little
and being in this country and being in this business since 50 years, we had some experiences with the crisis. So that's why in our business model, we are very conservative. We are not really going into, we don't like to go into big risks. We don't really would like to put find ourselves in very difficult positions, especially because a very, very easy formula in Turkey is like we can. It's not right. You cannot find 3 good years back to each other. So there is always a price after 2 good years. So this was the experience. So that's how we plan ourselves in the tourism business in Turkey in general. So that's why in 2015, first of all, was the last good year we had since many after some years. So in 16, in Turkey, we faced the coup attempt, and we have the Russian fighter plane problem between Turkey and Russia. In 2017, it was a very difficult year from the European market. So the drop from 16 to 17 is approximately 38%. 2018, we started to recover. And in 2019, there is Janet, was a very good year after 3 bad years. And then Thomas Cook collapsed in the end of the year, in September 24th. And then afterwards, of course, it was a big shock and, of course, a disappointment in the industry. Then, in March, we faced the pandemic. And 2020, while we were thinking that the crash of Thomas Cook was a big disaster, the pandemic was already teaching us something else. And, of course, without having this conservative mentality in our DNAs, it was not possible to cope with all these financial distractions. We immediately shrank ourselves. Unfortunately, we needed to take the decision to shut down every property. We needed to freeze the contracts of, unfortunately, our employees. And we shrank immediately, and we started to wait. So we made our financial plans at least to survive without having any single income for one and a half years with our banks and every loan. So financial, first thing was stopping the operation. Second thing was financial security for 1.5 years. And the third thing was just following, because it was beyond our abilities to make anything. So thanks God, in 2021, things started to work again. And now we are sailing back in the good years. But of course, the behind this successful operation, the main thing is we are a conservative company. We are not cowboys, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of lessons here. I think for anyone listening that's a business owner or is maybe, you know, running a part of an organization around having full visibility of your numbers, around, you know, making those tough choices of, you know, worst case scenario, if we have zero income, what do we need to do? What does it look like financially and operationally? And as you say, I think around risk and managing risk, you know, if you have that more conservative approach that you've had, you've still grown and are a huge, huge business and massively successful over all the years you've been operating. But at the same time, you're not, you're very considered with your investments to make sure that you have enough liquidity, because at the end of the day, that's the blood, isn't it? That's the lifeblood of a business. You have to be able to operate. And I think there's some big lessons there for people when they're tough, right. You know?
Liquidity is very important thing. I mean, it is the blood of the companies. But from another side, you know, for example, the collapse of Thomas Cook was in September. And in September, while you're thinking that the collapse, it's not only losing the year, it's also losing your biggest customer, but also you're losing the coming year, because you already marketed and agreed with many conditions with your client to produce that capacity, which is a huge capacity of our business. So for us, the priority became to compensate that lost capacity for the next year. So while we were sad about Thomas Cook, but on the other side, we just remembered that now we need to think for the future and replace the customers with someone else's, because otherwise we are going to lose the coming year. So it was a bigger stress for us to plan 2020 in 2019 September, who to work with. I mean, as being a tour operator yourself, long years, who can you sign a contract with for the coming year in September and put your hotel into its program? So it's not easy. And of course, pandemic was another big problem with itself. So it was 2-3 years back to back, a big challenge for many companies all around. And I think we learned a lot from that.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And, you know, when Thomas Cook went under, obviously, you know, that came as a shock to a lot of people. And for you, it was a big your part of your business. Can you remember can you take yourself back to how you, when it was all unraveling and you heard the news, what were your sort of initial feelings and at the time, Borat? Can you remember how it sort of, you know, when that news hit, how you had to react and how you felt?
Of course, I don't want to remember, but I of course, Janet, actually, you know, just to give a further information, Turkish resorts are 90% depending on tour operator businesses. So it's not B2C, it's B2B resorts. So that's why tour operators, Turkey is a very important tour operator destination, and tour operators are very important for Turkish tourism people, touristic people. So that's why a giant tour operator, global tour operator like Thomas Cook, is having a big importance for Turkish tourism, like the other big tour operators are today. So, of course, we were not believing that such a huge organization can collapse, because no one was expecting such a big company will go bust.
No.
Even though today, when I look back, all the signs were showing us clearly that the game was over months ago. I think with that illusion or saying, which is saying that, yes, that such a big company will never collapse, or they will never let it to collapse. Yeah. No, it was just a myth. So this was the big outcome for me about it.
Yeah, difficult. And, you know, it's been, so this is the thing, isn't it? People look at a business, they look at a leader, they see someone that's successful like you are, Barak, and they go, oh, it's all right for him. That's all right. He's got his business. He's got his family and house. But no one knows how tough it can be on the road to, you know, to the final destination. And I think that's the thing. And it's good to be able to talk about the challenges as well as the successes. But, you know, through this time, I mean, it's been a very tough few years. And thankfully, well, fingers crossed, we're starting to kind of see more positive, you know, conditions ahead. What have you learned about yourself, Burak, as a leader, you know, through all of this?
Well, actually, I am so, first of all, thankful to Gary, because in such a difficult days, although, I mean, he was always having his trust and confidence to our organization, because we were always having the right competition. When he was in TUI, we were his competition in Turkey as representing Thomas Cook. And he was the person whom I contacted first, and he was establishing EasyJet Holidays. And without a doubt, in these difficult years, he appointed us as the incoming agent of EasyJet Holidays in Turkey, and we continued our business without giving any break in the UK market. So, to answer your question, what I learned: you need to have a trustful company, and you need to have a trustful organization in this business, because in the end of the day, you're giving service to the client that you share. That example was, for me, the best important example of why we are Diana Travel today. So I have to say.
Yeah. And, you know, when you look back at your career from when you started as that bellboy, carrying the luggage to where you are now, is there any advice you would give your younger self, Burak, when you look back? What would you say to young Burak?
Well, what should we do earlier was to go international. What I meant with that, we stayed in the country. We should expand our organization to an international level much earlier. We are still a nation of company. I'm not talking about only the natural part of it, but also I'm talking about the hotel section of it, because although I said that we learned from this crisis, one thing we didn't learn was, or we didn't do our after our learning, was to go abroad. So we need to bring our company or our investments out of the country, and we need to be an international investment or a hotel management company or a tourism organization soon.
Ah.
So this is something I have said.
So is this something, Burak, that we could see develop over the next coming years?
Hopefully. This is necessary, I have to say.
How exciting.
Yes. So we just started, Janet.
The best is yet to come, Burak. We've only just begun. Fantastic. So listen, Burak, I could talk to you for absolutely hours, and it's been fascinating to hear about, you know, your journey and what's happened in Turkey, how you've managed to navigate through, you know, arguably the most challenging times ever in the travel industry. You know, but I'm also interested to hear, over the years, you'll have had lots of good advice from people. You will also have had some less good advice, I'm sure. And you're lucky, because you've got the right people in your world, haven't you? You know, you've got the strong support from Hassan and from your mum and the, you know, your sister. You're a very tight unit, and your team have been with you for many, many years, a lot of them. So you've got good people around you. But when you look back, can you think of the best piece of advice that you've been given, or a really good piece of advice that sort of stayed with you for a long time?
Well, the best advice I have been given was to trust this industry and to stay in this company, I have to say. I think this was the best advice, and I'm so happy to be in this industry, and I'm so happy to know you, to meet you, actually. So this was the best advice I had to say. And the worst advice is, I need to think about it because it's not that easy. There are lots of examples of it. It's not that easy to give an answer to that. I need to put some notes about it, and I will tell this to you later.
Oh, fantastic. Well, listen, maybe that's a sign, Burak, that you will always be looking for the positives. You'll always be looking for the positives, and you filter out some of that negative, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, you can tell me later. You can tell me later. But and you know, the podcast is called Brave, Bold, Brilliant, Burak, as you know, and it has been a real pleasure to have you on as a guest. But can you, when you think of that, what does that mean to you?
Well, what that means to me, I think they are three magical words to the key to the success. With this, I think they are the key of being successful in your career. Is what I think
Fantastic. And Burak, where can people find you? Because, you know, there'll be people listening to this that, you know, maybe are in our industry that think, oh gosh, you know, yeah, absolutely, I need a good partner in Turkey. Or there might be other business people that go, oh, I just really want to connect with Burak because, you know, we're both entrepreneurs and they can, you can learn a lot from each other. Where's the best place for people to connect with you, Burak?
Well, the best place to connect with me is via, of course, my email address. But of course, we have our social media sites, our LinkedIn addresses, and all our related company pages. But of course, the direct contact to me is my email.
Perfect. Well, what we'll do, Burak, we'll if it, with your permission, of course, we'll put those links in the show notes. If you're listening to this on the podcast, if you're watching on YouTube, you know, or wherever you're actually consuming this great advice from Burak, we'll make sure that your details are there so that people can reach out to you. But, you know, Burak, it's been an absolute pleasure, not only just to chat to you now, but to have known you all these years, all these nearly 20 years. We'll get to 20 years and then we'll be talking about, oh, we've known each other 30 years and 40 years. I'm very much sure of that. So, and this is the joy, you know, of the travel industry. It's not only that you do business and you have, you know, strong professional relationships, you know, you become lasting friends, and certainly both Chris and I feel really lucky to have had yourself and the rest of the family as not only as business colleagues but also as friends. So thank you so much, Burak. I really appreciate it.
I thank you very much, Janet. And lots of hugs and a big success this year.
Fantastic. Thanks, Burak.
Take care.
I really hope you've enjoyed Brave, Bold, Brilliant. Don't forget to subscribe and share with all your friends. And if you've enjoyed listening, I'd love it if you'd leave me a 5-star review.